The ACN podcast is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners and sponsors, including the Agile Alliance. As a nonprofit membership organization, the Agile Alliance is an excellent resource to help you along your Agile journey. To learn more about the Agile Alliance and our other sponsors, as well as how you can become a sponsor or supporter of our show, please visit acnpodcast.org for more information. And thank you for your support. Good morning and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Agile Coaching Network. The Agile Coaching Network has been in existence for now 85 episodes, which is incredibly cool. Our goal is to talk about the issues and specifically how do we as Agile coaches, how do we get better at our craft and how do we take that knowledge in a way that we can apply it directly into our businesses. I want to thank everyone who sent me a note about my recent little bundle of joy that showed up last month. My granddaughter, Callista Ray. I'm a proud grandpa. She's doing incredibly well. She's starting to wake up into existence. I did with her a Star Trek Colors book the other day, just because I love Star Trek and she needs to start off early. But anyway, I want to thank everyone.
And you needed to have your coloring itch scratch.
Yeah, exactly. But it was fun. So she's learned about Klingons. And I didn't actually read this in conversational Klingon like I would. We'll do that later when she's older. I am joined with a great set of co-hosts every month. Shauna, Deanna, Jorg, Sheila Eckhart, as well as Sheila McGrath, and of course, Hendrik are all my co-hosts here. The goal here is not to just dominate the conversation. This is a conversation between you and us. And the people who showed up for the live ACN event are a part of this. With that, we do have a couple of things that are very important for you. If you are new to Agile, we still want to hear your perspective. Some of us have been doing Agile and Agile coaching for a long time. And so some of the things and the issues that you're dealing with might be something new, or it might be emergent that we might not have heard before, but it also helps to bring again back to the contrast that we want to have in this call. We don't want you to not put your hand up because you feel that, oh, I'm intimidated by the knowledge that's in the room. That's not the case. This is meant to be an open conversation between all of us. And so I just want to reinforce that so that we're all on the same page and we look forward to hearing your comments as we go through the hour. Last thing, I'm going to do another plug for the Strategic Agility Lab that we've got going next week. And the reason why I'm plugging this is because two of the hosts, actually three of the hosts, are going to be present at the event. This is your opportunity if you want to spend 2 days with us for a leadership retreat that we're talking about on how we build organizational agility. Specifically, this event is meant to be for people who have went through the basics already and are looking for more of an open format for learning about how do we approach this thing that we all, I think at this particular point that it's become elusive for some organizations, which is how do we connect the strategic components of our business with our tactical components of our business? And how do we effectively do that in a way that when a new opportunity comes up, how do we pivot quickly and be able to go swarm on those things? So that's what we're going to be talking about next week. We might do a podcast there. I know Dr. Dave, if you guys know him, he's going to be there. And I think he's going to be recording his podcast there as well. So we're going to have a couple of podcasts that have come out of that, which will be cool. But otherwise, if you can come join us in Portland, Oregon, that would be great. Let's talk about influence. This topic came to mind for me because of a number of different reasons. And one of the things that I see as I go in and I help organizations out, one of the common questions that comes from the Agile coaches or even any change agent within the organization is how do I more effectively influence the groups that I'm working with or the executives that I'm working with? And as most of us that are working in this environment, we don't have positional power over the people that we're trying to influence. And so the question comes down to techniques and ways that we can go off and exercise this muscle, which is, I think, incredibly vital for us as coaches to be able to get stuff done. And you might have a different list than my list, but I think there's 6 key elements that go into influence. Number one, credibility. Which is, do people look at me as a credible source for information and able to help them? Second is communication skills. How effectively can I get my point across? And if you guys have ever worked in executive leadership, I can tell you that in most times that if I've got a conversation with a CEO or somebody else, I've got to get that thing wired in quickly. And I've got to be able to have really good communication skills to go bring those ideas and recommendations across. Emotional intelligence, which is, am I able to keep my composure at times when I'm in front of people, when I know that the people in front of me might be wrong about what they're talking about, or maybe it's an emotionally charged moment. How do I keep myself in check and understand where I am at as I am going through the conversations? Things are uncomfortable to me. How do I represent that? And how do I not let that influence my communication or other things that are going on. Authenticity, persuasion techniques that I might have to bring to bear to get my point across. And then, of course, my network and my relationships all kind of factor into my ability to influence people. And there might be a bigger list here, and I'm open to anyone to say, hey, look, I have a seventh or an eighth item, or Ray, I don't think that one of these are particular traits of ones, but I'm willing to, let's go explore that. The other thing is, and as far as tools, and I've read a number of books about influence, but the one that sticks out most in my mind is the book by Robert Cialdini, which with a name like Cialdini, doesn't that sound like he should be like a magician? But I guess in some regards, influence is like being a magician in some regards. But he believes in a couple of core techniques that he finds that are probably most effective with groups. One of them is reciprocity. That is, if I give something to somebody, then they feel like they owe you. These are not like giving something big, but in the case of what Hershey learned, that if you walk through the door of one of their stores, like one of their corporate stores, and somebody hands you a chocolate kiss, that their sales actually increased because you gave me something. So therefore I'm more apt to make a purchase. The ability of you being consistent with the way that you are committed and moving towards something. If anyone corners me and talks about Agile, I'm very consistent on my views of it. I'm not going around and mixing this up. So when people think of me in Agile, they go, oh, that's his worldview. And some people like it. Other people, maybe not so much, but most people do. Social proof. And as you see within our environment, we have a lot of people who look to see who else is on the current Agile train. They look at the people and companies to reinforce that they are going in the right direction. By the way, social proof is one of the big selling points that most consultancies use. Let me tell you about this company, or tell you about this team, or tell you about this success or outcome in this organization. And that's to help to go bolster up the environment around that, hey, this must be a good move for us. And scarcity is another one, which is it rare in the environment? If anyone saw the sort of the fiasco with, was it the NFCs or whatever it was? What were those things called? Where they were selling the monkey pictures? I forget which one it was, but that particular, yeah, the NFTs, that was trying to go create scarcity in an area where it's, oh, I'm the only one who owns this particular picture. And therefore that has some influence associated to it. And of course, authority. And authority is the one what I can say that as I've been a, you know, senior director in organizations, that there's a group of people that work underneath of me that the authority of we're going to go move a particular direction, there's a power dynamic at play. And now this particular one is not one that we typically as Agile coaches get to exercise that much. But I've had certain times when executives have given me what effectively proxy to represent them in something. So if they were really into Agile and Agile development, they said, hey, when you go out into the field, let everyone know that I have my backing. So that kind of indirectly gives you proxy of authority in situations. So not all influence is good. And I really just want to stress one point with this. The goal of influence is for good, meaning that we have a mission that we're trying to go off and accomplish. We're not trying to manipulate. We're not trying to be disingenuous to people. The goal is to help people through a mental shift in a lot of regards. And so those mental shifts, I think that we as coaches, as we learn up the toolkit of influence, we also have to, you know, keep in mind we're influencing for good. So to kick us off on the questions, first, what are some of the core techniques that you use? What are the core techniques that you use? And please give the context of where you use them. Because as you know, that some of these techniques are something that I have it in my back pocket, but looking at the environment around me, that's probably not the right tool to go use. So I'd like you to give me some examples of what you use and the context that you use them in. The last question is, what are ways that you can improve, since part of the traits that back this up are credibility, communication skills, the emotional intelligence, your authenticity, networking, and relationships. Can you give me some of the ways that we could go off and improve in these areas? So to kick us off, Hendrik, you have not been here for a while, sir. I'm going to go pick on you.
What an honor. Thank you, Ray. I had one thought looking at your list of skills and so on, and that maybe relates a bit to some of the core techniques also. I think a foundation to the whole thing is self-leadership. This is influence, I think, is a highly psychological thing. And it starts really with you. If you want to influence, you need to understand your own psychology, understanding when you yourself show emotions like frustration, irritation, and so on, and the ability to catch them and use them for what you are doing. I think that's a very important thing. So a core technique is maybe becoming self-aware, becoming aware of what's going on inside of you and being able to respond to it. That's maybe just as a foundation to the thing.
Sure. So just expand on that a little bit. When you say catching yourself, what are ways that you, number one, you have identified that you might have something going on that...
Give an example.
Sure, please.
Something that happened to me in one of these team coaching situations. So I have been together with a leadership team for several months, actually, to help them think about their organization of operation flows and improvements and so on. And we had intense discussions over those weeks. And there came a moment after, I don't know, 3 weeks, somebody brought up the same question or the same concern again that had been voiced a number of times before. And I was standing there with them, and I felt this huge wave of frustration. And inside of me, I was screaming, thinking, like, come on, really? Do you really want to go there again? I felt so upset, actually. So my impulse would have been to give them the look or the start screaming or something like this. But I felt this energy wave in me. And as a coach, you need to be aware of one thing. It's not never about you, it's about them. Then I needed to handle this emotion. And what I thought in that moment is, yeah, what? Okay, it sucks, but it is what it is. I cannot neglect that this thing comes up again. So I need to try again. I need to stay in the moment. But then also to cool myself down, I made a promise to myself. I said to myself, Hendrik, we are going to have a super good dinner tonight with a nice glass of wine, good food, and so on, and we will have a really good time later on. It's a little hack, but catching yourself and then actually talking to yourself and your emotional side and say, hey, come on, it will be okay. Let's have a good time later on. And now let's stay focused on the people who need you there. Just as an example of self-leadership, a practical thing that has happened to me.
That's great. I think that having worked a number of decades with Israelis, one of the things that they take in some of the meetings is they take the devil's advocate role sometimes. And even though they might support your idea, they are there to tear the idea apart a bit, make it better by giving very blunt comments. And it took me a while to control my emotion with that, because this is my product that we're talking about. In the case of that, I wasn't an engineer at the time. And it's just, you just called my baby ugly. And it's, you put on the Papa Bear act and you've got to, yeah, you do have to control that. So I definitely appreciate that.
The great thing, one thing I needed to learn, and in the meantime, I became relatively good at it. When you get irritated, what really helps me in the meantime is to actually step aside, look at myself and say, oh, look, you're getting irritated. What an interesting experience. What's behind this? So I actually embrace irritation with curiosity. And that helps also to not take things personal, because there are, of course, people that annoy me. But then it's more the question, okay, what's annoying me now here? And let's rather listen very careful now. And then, of course, honestly, how I would say, caringly, confrontatively, push back or respond to what was just said.
Well, cool. Thank you for all those. You've got a really good sense around these things, and I appreciate you sharing this. Steve Frazier, your hand went up briefly. Did you have something you wanted to add?
I did, and I put it in the chat to add to your influence strategies. And Cialdini is one of the books one of my go-to books for influence. But the other book is Fearless Change, Man's and Rising, which, and based on my personal experience, I would add things like collaboration, fear, inspiration, proximity, food, and reward. And these are techniques my focus has been primarily on technology transfer, which is tangential to coaching, but you're generally working with organizations that you're trying to get to move in some level of adoption. And in order to increase awareness, you're exercising influence strategies. And as has been previously mentioned, it's never about you as the person trying to do the influence. You also have to, if people are unhappy, always keep the focus on whatever it is you're trying to influence and not individuals. That's very important to maintain distance from personalities. Let's see that. It can be difficult. Mm-hmm. But happy to answer any questions that you might have about those additional points. But proximity and food are, and Kent Beck has mentioned this way back 20 plus years ago, being able to have small teams and breaking bread with them is an important way to influence their values and their adoption practices.
Sure. And the building of relationships, I think, is incredibly important there. I'm curious on the fear bullet, though. What I assume that this isn't fear tackling their safety or other things. It's okay. Give an example of how fear would potentially be used.
If you're trying to influence an organization and you have a competitor, your line of thinking might be fear along the lines of fear is do it or you'll be sorry. And that at least gets you around to having a discussion, because people may not view that as a risk or may not view that as important. But if you put it into that context, into the fear context, it can influence organizations to take action.
Sure.
But again, it really depends. Competition and competitive analysis, these are all data that can lead into creating an increased awareness of risk.
Sure. Yeah. Example of this, and I don't think it was really much as fear as much as it was peer pressure, which was competitive peer pressure, is that when we were doing agile adoption work, we would invite an invited speaker from another company, not a direct competitor, because we could never get a direct competitor in the door of the building. But we would bring, say, back at Intel, we might bring someone from Cisco over from their agile work, and they would bring one of their executives and talk about their agile adoption work. And just so happens, they might be ahead in a few areas that we were not doing so well in. And what I found was that since it was coming out from them, not me as the coach, that had a strong influence on our teams. It was like, well, if they're doing it, we should be able to do it as well. That type of
thing. Absolutely. So, social, this is the thing, is being able to leverage your community and have, but again, if your competitors are doing that, might be even a stronger influence.
Yeah, that's to do that, you really need to. That's where we meet in neutral grounds, which is like at a conference. We can mingle at conferences, but we can't mingle bringing you in on this thing. But yeah, we would feed in that sort of business intelligence about specifically how do
well,
we go ahead.
You bring up an interesting point about competition, because in many of our technology domains, there's very strong competition, but there also has to be interoperability. And so it's not only at conferences, but at standards meetings. And, you know, particularly in telecom, if you don't have interoperability, some people are going to be unhappy. What do you mean I can't call so-and-so because they're on a different network, or that I can't connect to them? So you do have to meet, and it's not necessarily terribly neutral ground, but at least you're aware of the competition.
Sure. Yeah, and I can tell you that when we were doing USB, dating myself here big time, but when we were doing that, we knew that we had to go work as an industry towards it. And yeah, there was a lot of peer pressure of who could get the first block of text in the specs document, and because that would influence the rest to contribute or to be faster next time, because they didn't want their ideas not to be designed in. Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot those days. I think I still have some steam.
Well, they still exist today, though. Look at Apple and Samsung or Android. It's perhaps better to do an Android to Apple comparison. It's always, or even if you're looking in a programming sense, all the discussion around open source and are you an Amazon? Are you a Microsoft or are you a Google Cloud? You still have to talk, because this question of about interoperability, and that's really a fear factor, because if you're not interoperability, will that mean that you'll be left in the dust?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for those comments.
Okay, no worries.
No, good to have you, man. Diana, what do you have on this one?
Yeah, I'm reacting to both Henrik and Steve. Hi, Steve. I was thinking, in terms of this self-awareness that Henrik was talking about, I think another piece of that, I think that it's linked to authenticity. You can't really be authentic if you don't know yourself and know your reactions and those kinds of things. So I think that's really linked, but it also has to do with understanding when I show up in a space where I may want to influence folks, who shows up or what shows up with me? What is my impact? Just my presence there. And kind of learning about that, studying that, and learning in general, I think is important for both credibility and emotional intelligence and all, many of these other things. And then as Steve was talking about fear, it made me think about Cotter and his thing about the first thing you want to do if you're trying to influence a change is create some urgency. I think that's another aspect of fear. It's, oh my gosh, we really need to do this or else something bad is going to happen. It's not directly fearfulness exactly, but it's anticipation of possible consequences. And so I think that goes in there as well. And certainly, but a year ago or so, I published a book called Lead Without Blame. And I think that maybe that's part of relationships. It's like how we treat people makes a difference in our influence. As we are discovering, when we influence people by, or try to influence people by coercion and fear and so on, that works for the short term. That may work for the short term. But in the long term, it often backfires, as we are seeing that in our public life right now, that eventually that has degraded the relationship and people are less willing to stay under your influence. Whereas if you're building healthy, trusting, blame-free relationships, those last forever. I know people that I've had those kinds of good relationships with, they can contact me 10 years later, or I can contact them 10 years later, and it's still there. The memory of how we treated each other is still there, and we can still build on it, even across long periods of time. So those are a few things that I would add and that I think are really important to this conversation.
I'm curious, because the urgency thing, I know that I've exercised and used that many a times in multiple roles. Mm-hmm. Do you think, though, that in general, the urgency bar is sometimes overused by leaders?
Yeah, actually, I just had a conversation the other day with some folks who their small startup company was going through some tough times. And some particularly tough times came along, and they emphasized to their people, we've emphasized in the past sustainable pace and those kinds of things, but now we need urgency. We've got to deliver these things, or we're not going to be able to stay in business. And the they gave them all the cues that they were seeing that might be true and what their customers' expectations were and stuff, and saying urgency a lot. But again, it's a short-term thing. And so one of the things we were talking about is, okay, you had a few months where you were able to rely on that sense of urgency. Now you may need to back off a bit. And maybe we're not going to talk about urgency anymore. Maybe we're going to talk about purpose, or maybe we're going to talk about timeliness, the importance of timeliness, some of those kinds of things that are less fraught. Because once you've played that urgency card, we need to do this right now, you can't play it again if something even worse comes along. You know, right. There's no place to go from as urgent as you could possibly be. There is no place else to go. And so even though you can use that in the short term sometimes, then in the long term, you've got to moderate it. And you can't just continue to say urgency. That's violating the sustainable pace, and you end up burning people out. And I want to go someplace where it's less stressful for me, and you start losing people and those kinds of things. So that fear, urgency, they are influencing tools that you can use, but only in the short term. And it's important to be aware of that and to use them judiciously. Is it really important that we beat this drum around urgency right now, or is there something else we could do? And let's save it for when it's really important that we really need to use it. And then it will come to the people with credibility. Mm-hmm. We're not constantly saying everything is urgent. We reserve that for the things that truly are, and then people can respond.
Cool. Thank you for that. One of the comments that came in through the chat was, they may not remember what you said, but they will remember how you made them feel.
That's funny. I have that on one of my virtual backgrounds of...
Do you? That's...
Yeah, on Zoom. Yeah.
That is cool. And that's incredibly true. That reaction that you have. And I don't know, that there's just certain people as you go through in this again, I think it's part of the emotional intelligence is, why do I feel this way about this person, you know, and trying to recenterize around that. And it does sometimes point back to, yeah, you created urgency, but you know what? There was no evidence around any of us that actually said that's something we should feel urgent about. It was just, you were just trying to squeeze a little bit more blood out of the orange. Scott, you raised up your hand. What do you have on this?
Yeah, as everybody was talking, servant leadership came to mind. And a lot of times when I'm working with individuals and teams, trying to show them that I'm here to try to help you, I'm not here to tell you what to do, and trying to reinforce that every day so that when they see me coming, they're not like, oh God, what's Scott going to make me do today? It's no, he's here to help us. And look at how we work and the different ways that we work and see if we can find ways to become more effective every day. Look at the data. These frameworks should be based on empiricism and trying to show that to the teams so that they get comfortable and you build up that trust, which is a lot of what you were alluding to, Ray, when you went through your initial slide. I think a lot of showing empathy and relationships and stuff is all around building trust. And if they trust you and know you're there to help them, I think you can help these teams get better every day, and mm-hmm. that they will actually work with you and not against you.
Sure. I'm curious, and setting the frame for people. And I've noticed this sometimes when I go into certain organizations and I have to have that conscious mindset of, am I here as a consultant, which is I'm going to, you know, you want me to tell you what to go do, and, or I'm a coach, which I'm going to help to bring that out of the people and maybe teach them a little bit of things and let them apply and explore. I'm curious that when you're walking into that scenario, that there's certain people that somehow get confused with, this person is here to tell me what to go do, even though that you might have stated that you're a coach and you are not that individual. How do you reinforce that with individuals so you can get them into that mindset effectively so you can be more effective?
I think it goes back to one, I take it, meet teams where they're at. I take it slow. And I reinforce the message that I'm here to help you guys identify ways as a team that you can improve. So, you know, when we get into retrospective, let's look at the data that your team is generating. So if it's Scrum, what does your velocity chart look like? What's your burn down chart look like? Those are, that's data that you as a team are producing, not me coming in here telling you anything. And working with that data and any other observations that come up and any issues that they start to experience. So instead of me coming in and saying, you need to do this and this, let's just get rolling in a very light way and then let your problems come to the surface. And someone was telling me a while ago that Scrum doesn't solve your problems. Scrum does a great job of shining a big spotlight on your problems. And then it's up to you as a team to figure out how you want to improve on those issues. And trying to go in there and again, say, look, you guys have issues. Now, if you're coming to me, you were looking for help. And it's a lot better than me coming in and saying, hey, this is what you need to do. No, you guys are experiencing a problem you want help with. So let's go get the coach and let's see if we can get some help in trying to figure out how we can get better.
Great tips. I like those ideas. Thank you so much for that. Steve, you raised your hand up again. Do you have something to add to this?
I was just going to say the line that you don't want to use. Hi, I'm from here from corporate and I'm here to help. which paralleled some of the other comments, but you've got to use your skills to say, I'm not from corporate. This is whatever we're trying to do. And how would you like to adopt this? Or how would you like to customize this? You need to get buy-in from the folks you're working with. And that buy-in is part of, it's almost a hidden agenda influence strategy, because that's what you're doing. But if you said, let me back up, it's like quality. Quality is a journey, not a destination. You've probably heard that slogan. It's by being able to walk through. That's how you're doing your influence. You're not saying, hey, we want to get to this destination and that's what we need to do. That'd be more the, hi, I'm here from corporate and we need quality. So here's what we're going to do. That tends not to work.
Oh, interesting. One of the things I found since I've worked for central teams, both in the Corporate Quality Network, which was an organization that used to go into organizations and help them with quality issues and help them anywhere from organizational improvements to improvement of quality within their organization. And also other organizations that were doing like the Agile transformation work or other types of transformation work. And what I found was, is I was actually giving more influence to a certain executive, because when I would say that person's paying for it, you don't have to worry about this. The tab is being picked up. I think it was building credibility for that executive to have more influence within the organization. So
you've got to be careful.
Okay.
Because if that executive goes away, you suddenly lose your credibility. So one of my strategies was never to be tied to just one source of credibility.
Oh, yeah. You got to diversify your portfolio. Absolutely. But I can tell you that scenario that you pointed out right there is the very destabilizing component to most transformation works in our industry, which is leadership changed and life is a series of reorgs, and they come on almost a regular cadence for some people, that once that person is gone and that proxy is gone. And as a matter of fact, somebody said early on the chat was, do you need that executive to say to everyone else that Ray is in charge of X or Y and Z? Sometimes that's necessary. But yeah, if you lose that individual, you got to have your backup. So one of the things I've at least done as a strategy is have lots of sponsors. We have like a coalition of sponsorship around something. And if you only have one, then you're fragile. You got to be careful with that. Jorg, happy Friday, dude.
Happy Friday, everybody. Yeah, my thoughts really somehow rotate around the beginning of influence. So the question actually, whom do I want to influence and in what direction? So what's my goal here? Is it just going to that group and making their life better, or is it getting them to do a thing a certain way or whatever? And then who are they? Because it makes a lot of difference in what kind of culture you're moving, what kind of team you're facing. And if you don't at least have an idea what you're trying to move, you don't know where you can move it. So that is an important thing. So maybe just to give you an example, I once went to a talk to talk exactly about collaboration and exchanging information across cultural different teams, and everybody was late. So I'm from Germany, that's not what I'm used to. But I was quite aware that where I was, this was actually they making themselves comfortable, they prepare, so they have time and the free space to listen. So I took this very positively, and I told them, and they suddenly noticed that, yeah, that guy is actually here to work with us, not to download something to us that already opened then the discussion. And if I'd done it a bit differently, as happened maybe in a worse situation, that might have closed everything down in my head and in their head maybe. And so that matters. And you need to do this more often than you think. It's not once you go into an organization, the story is set. Not once you meet people, the story is set. Every time you have a different goal, a different topic, you might need to consider motivations and needs again. Because if you want to, let's say, influence the engineering work of a person, that is a different thing to developing their career or making them share their experience or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the starting point that really matters to get you off on a good go. And then you can only influence so far as people are willing and able to go. Very often they seem willing to do a lot, but they might not be able. So one thing you really need to look for is enablement. And if you do this and make good promises in that regard and keep them, this will give you as well a lot of credibility. If that guy is really willing to invest himself into doing this change or proving that this works, it's different from talking about it.
Doesn't this really get into the core concepts of meeting people where they're at?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm curious, what's some of your strategies of doing that? Of one, assessing it, where they're at, and then how do you wire it in so that you can get to work on what you're trying to accomplish?
Definitely curiosity. So I try for every group and in individual conversations person to be curious about something from the beginning, either their surroundings, just what piques my interest. Normally there is something, so I can already start asking about this and get a conversation going. As well, I try to pique them a bit to be curious about me, because I'm trying to tell a fact that they're probably not aware of and that's surprising to them. So to open this up in an interesting way, I take my time to listen. So when I join a new team, I try to be in that team, visible, available, but I'm definitely not the first one to speak. And if I'm in a larger office, I'm very often walking a lot around the rooms just to grab that opportunity of talking about something that's important just in the moment. So having that availability is an important thing, not just being behind a desk or somewhere, getting this association. I'm in that problem. That guy is here to help, coach, whatever support. I can grab him and ask. And there's not a big thing like, how do I get in contact? How do I start being available, reachable, visible? Is definitely one thing. The other thing that I try is, if people tell me something they're doing, to see the good thing in it and build on that. So I'm really very often try to voice something I see as good. This is already there. We can build on this. Are you actually aware that you're doing X, Y, Z? Because very often people are not aware how good they already are.
That's all excellent points. Thank you for that. Norma, you typed in something into the question box. And if you don't mind, I'm going to activate your microphone if you want to come in and just talk about that real quick. Norma, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Hope you don't mind I activated your microphone, because you typed in something, I think, very thoughtful. And I wanted you to go ahead and wire that into the conversation.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for all the insights. Very thoughtful. Well, I know along the lines of the discussion you're holding, sometimes a team may have a member that probably had developed in the past a good relationship with management, with the direct management, and gain credibility. However, these individual costs are a lot of extra work for the rest of the team. The team, for example, is offshore. And because the individual has the same language, the same culture of offshore, so they get along, they communicate well. But sometimes there are mistakes made and the software delivered, and it's pretty clever hiding sometimes that because these were the way they were because their direction to the team or offshore, but overall it comes like it was not them, it was something else. Either the customer didn't convey the requirements correctly or something. Very clever. And the costs had cost inefficiencies for the business. The team is spending a lot more time being overworked because they have to rework the code or getting very long calls with this individual. So in a summary, it had been the toxic individual, but management considers an asset. And even if the business had complained or so, sounded like it's moving forward. So how do you deal in those situations, even when the business and other parties are being very professional, the individual, empathetic, and I understand, I try to meet you where you are, everything you have said, but the individual is still using those tactics, very clever.
Yeah, there's a couple of scenarios, and I'll open this up for others to be able to comment on this. Sometimes when you get the person who doesn't quite fit the culture come in, or they're using techniques that are toxic to the rest of the environment, there's multiple different ways to handle it. But I think the main one is that just have the conversation with the individual about what's not working about it. And I can tell you as a coach in the environment, there's been plenty of cases where I'll go in and be an arbiter for different teams dealing with that scenario. It comes up on retrospectives, it comes up on different things, it's an impediment. So therefore, let's go work it out. And base-wise, it could be just team working agreements being re-emphasized for the organization so that you don't make it a us versus them. It's just that this is our contract of how we're working together. The way that you're approaching it is not within the bounds of that contract, but you don't point it directly to the individual. You say, look, this is the way we agreed to work. Do we need to modify these? Or is there a way that we can resolve this particular issue? So I found that those things work well as tools. The other one is just, again, and this is sometimes hard, and business is sometimes hard, but it does require sometimes the tough discussions and really, and I wouldn't do that in a public environment with the individual. I would take them to the side and have those chats. One thing I learned a long time ago about dealing with multinational, because I've always worked for a multinational company, is that you got to understand the culture in which you're working in. That's the reason why my dance card on United is so high, because if I'm going to work with people in Malaysia, I'm going to go to Malaysia and I'm going to go learn and understand some of that base culture. And I think what Steve said early on about breaking bread is in the same space. It's I want to go there and I want to experience the culture and the people that are there and understand about how they work. Because they're clearly all smart and intelligent people and they get stuff done. Let's normalize it. The other thing is just, it could be a sign that the company culture is weak within the bigger sense of the word, meaning that most companies, through acquisitions of multiple different teams and over the years, they get a watered down version of what is their company values. Always pulling back to the company values is something that if we're going to treat each other with respect, let's make sure that we treat each other with respect. Use those type of power words in the scenario. And then the last one is for me, and I'll open it up for others to say, is let Yeah, escalation will set you free. The senior leaders in the organization are there because they are to remove impediments for the organization. If that person becomes an impediment, then there's a conversation that has to happen one level up. But I wouldn't do that first. I would always like wait a little bit. Scott, your hand came up. Did you have something on this one, or was there some other comment that you wanted to make? Or was your hand just left up because of...
No, it must have been a mistake by me. Sorry.
That's okay. No problem. It happens. I sit there. Your hand must have been getting tired.
Yeah. I'm holding it up with my other hand.
Okay. Yeah, then it is really tired. Diane, Hendrik, Jorg, did you guys or anyone else on the call want to also give some advice?
I'd like to just say that that what Norma is describing is very familiar to so many of us. So to let her know she's not alone in this. And it's been most problematic when I've seen it in, I don't know, for want of a better term, the tech bro culture. Somebody who went to school with or was a buddy on an earlier startup or something gets brought in at another level. At a high level of the organization, but they are causing all the problems like Norma is describing. And sometimes they have become your boss. And so escalating to them isn't gonna do you any good. So that, again, back to the influence strategy of networking and relationships, and what you were talking about is a coalition of sponsors. You need to have a number of folks that you can go to in the organization. And sometimes not even that's going to work. But I've just seen that pattern so many times of somebody hires in their buddy at a very high, middle, or senior level of the organization. And then that person turns out to be the kind of toxic that Norma is describing. And it's a really difficult problem to deal with. And so I have a lot of compassion and empathy for what Norma's going through.
Thank you for that. Hendrik, your microphone came live. What do you have?
Yeah, Diana saying this is a super tricky thing, and there is not maybe a general answer to the thing. The thing is, I believe that you need to, but what helps me is, first of all, I need to understand what annoys me now here really, and what is the thing, the pattern that is not helpful for the organization. And then the question is always, can I be caringly confrontational with this person? That is maybe one of these other skills that are important, the skill to give feedback. I think it's extremely important. And confronting such a person with their behavior is maybe the starting point. Then, like Diana is saying, sometimes there are people you cannot confront, or which you can try it. And when you see this is not going anywhere, yeah, you need to think about what's the right consequence for you. If it's too toxic and you feel like either this person or me and this person is not moving, then maybe you need to start thinking about moving. And the last piece of advice I have is time will tell. So sometimes, in my experience, is just be patient and let the system work on it. Sounds a bit ridiculous maybe, but I have had it a number of times that there were managers that were not optimal, let's say. And in the past, I was so often like, it really was eating me up almost. But then a year later or so, there were history. So sometimes waiting is the right thing to do.
Yeah, those are all scenarios. One other thing I found that team happiness scores. So if you suddenly say, we are at risk of losing technical talent because people are unhappy, make an anonymous voting system where people can go put in their inputs and share that with management. Here's the team. This is their delivery performance. Here's their happiness score. And if the happiness score is really low, someone's going to ask the question, why? Or the turnover, if you got access to team turnover and they ask why, then there can be a serious conversation around that. You got to be very tactful.
Ray, it sounds good, but I've never seen this working, at least in where I have been working. Trying to find proof and so on is extremely difficult. And getting that proof into the right place is another difficulty with that. So you can try that, but I'm not optimistic about that approach.
I've seen it succeed in certain cases. So go ahead, please.
And that is an area I understand that even HR have been involved. HR have conducted investigations and apparently found that witnesses and validate the investigations is now under the executive leadership to review, but it's taking time for them among the priorities they have. So yes, you said time is key, but you have to have a lot of patience as well, just watching and saying, well, you don't want to escalate something, you don't want to come across sensitized in a negative, more negative way, this individual. So it's a fine line.
It is. And that's sometimes the challenge of our work, working through influence. I'm going to have to wrap up the conversation. This has been great. Again, if you guys want to come join some of our co-hosts over in Portland, Oregon, we're going to be over at the Strategic Agility Lab over there. And if you type in Strategic Agility Lab at .org is one word, that'll pull up the information for that. Hopefully you can join us there. If not, we'll try to do some other virtual connection coming up in the coming months, because of just, we're coming into that special time of year. Friday, November 24th is the last ACN live event for the year, because of just the different holidays that are around. We find that December people sometimes don't show up, and people sometimes just need a break too. Just enjoy the holiday seasons as we're coming into it. But we look forward to having you on November 24th, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your month. The ACN podcast is for educational and informative use only. If you'd like to know more about the ACN community, please come up to acnpodcast.org and support our show.